This podcast is brought to you by Optus Sport, the only place to watch all 64 games of the 2018 FIFA World Cup live on Optus Sport.
That is right. Welcome to the Road to Russia right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea here with you today with only a few weeks to go until the commencement of the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia. Countdown. It's happening very quickly. Rick, good to be talking World Cup action.
It is. Good afternoon to you and good afternoon to all the listeners. It is only around the corner now. We can smell the World Cup air all the way from Russia right now.
Well, that's right. With the European leagues now all but done, the Champions League final, a small matter of the Champions
Just
League final
one.
To come this weekend. But with exception to that, it's all systems go World Cup focus. It is time. Unbelievable that it's already upon us. The lines are open if you'd like to talk World Cup action at any point in time. 99999. We're also on Twitter. We are at @FNR_radio. And a reminder that Optus Sport, of course, the only destination to watch all live matches from the tournament. Big tournament awaits. Looking forward to getting stuck into it. But all the news this week, Rick, has surrounded the squad selection, in some case preliminary squad selection. Of course, the deadline is the 4th of June for all nations to finalise with FIFA their final 23-man squads for the World Cup. Some have already done that. I question why, because obviously you can include a reserves list, and if there are injuries or unfortunate incidents, you can still make some changes. But regardless, some nations already announcing their 23-man teams, but some big names already withdrawn, missing out, and omitted completely from the squads. And I'd love to start with Argentina, because we know how strong Argentina are in attack. We know that they will be one of the favourites to win the tournament. Whether or not they go all the way, well, not many people are predicting them to do so. But one of their biggest names, and a player who, while is a big name, has never really got it done at international level. So you may be saying, well, why is it an issue if he's not been selected? Yet to score a goal for his nation, but did score a bucket load of goals for his club side, Inter Milan, in the Italian Serie A this season with 29, and the most goals scored by an Inter player since 1958-59. So a long time, broken all sorts of records, winner of the Capo Cannonieri Award as the top scorer in the competition. He was the joint winner this time around. 100 goals for Inter Milan. He led them to the UEFA Champions League. His name, of course, is Mauro Icardi, the captain of Inter Milan, left out of Argentina's 28-man provisional World Cup squad.
It's the biggest announcement of all, I think, even bigger than Alvaro Morata, to be perfectly honest. And why I say that is because, other than what you've just said, Gonzalo Higuain is still under an injury cloud. Sergio Aguero, my apologies. Now, he had arthroscopic knee surgery. He is yet to fully recover, yet he is in this team. Now, obviously, Sampaoli has not finalised the full team. He's still got one or two to sort of pick through, but if Aguero doesn't go, they're in a lot of trouble, because they'll be relying on A, Lionel Messi, B, Higuain, and C, Paulo Dybala to actually score the goals as the, technically speaking, only forwards in the team. And that's going to be an issue. Icardi as a backup would have been very nice. Even having both Higuain and Icardi both fully fit would have been even nicer, and you wouldn't have to worry about Aguero. Now they have to.
You're spot on. Now, he has been omitted from the squad in an Argentina team which we know that they have a huge amount of attacking players. And they've also listed a couple of midfielders who are actually attacking players. Di Maria is an attacker. But regardless, they've only actually named four official forwards or attackers in their squad: Aguero, Higuain, Messi, and Dybala. Now, with Aguero under that injury cloud, and Icardi, even a Diego Perotti, a very impressive player for Roma this season, a couple of players who have a little bit of experience at international level, but lots of great form coming in at club level. I just am a bit puzzled as to why he has been left out. And the big story surrounding Icardi and the uncertainty whether or not he would be selected, it's always been tipped that he wouldn't be selected, but that uncertainty has started from the fact that there have been reports Lionel Messi and he don't get along. So Messi certainly calls the shots in some capacity in the Argentine national team. And I'm not surprised he has been omitted. I just think it may be a decision that may prove to be costly.
I think it might be a little bit too costly for them. I mean, if we remember back to the last World Cup in Brazil, Messi did carry that team. And we have to obviously say that, because he actually did. I mean, all the goals he scored, I think he scored, what, four or five goals in that time. he really did call the shots. The players were spreading from him, giving him the space, similar to what he was able to do and has currently been doing at Barcelona. So he's been able to control the tempo of the game. He's been in charge. He obviously thinks that he's still in charge at the actual national team level, and he obviously was able to get them through to the World Cup based on scoring that hat-trick in the last final match day in order to qualify them for the tournament. So you can see he has a little bit of pull, but he hasn't really played a lot, you could say, with Icardi. And all of a sudden he's saying and striking him off the record. I think he's gone a little bit too early on this one.
Well, Icardi certainly doesn't have the best reputation off the pitch, and perhaps that plays a part in Messi's feelings for his Argentine, well, not teammate, but compatriot at this point. So it is confirmed, though, Icardi will miss out. There were some videos online on social media of Icardi still celebrating Inter's qualification and progress through the UEFA Champions League. So he doesn't appear to be affected, but I'm sure deep down that will be a very tough pill to swallow, because his form this season, as good as any striker in Europe, and was very consistent, led his side from the front and ultimately led his side to a first UEFA Champions League in six seasons.
And there's also a couple of comments that I've just been reading about Sampaoli and what he's been saying in the lead up after he's actually made this announcement. So he's using the excuse that the list that he has chosen is after a long and meticulous analysis and the style of play that he wants to go with. But this is the one that sort of caught my eye, and I don't know what you want to make of this, but Icardi, Perotti, Papu Gomez and Lautaro Martinez won't come to Russia with us because they are still good players who could be in our attack. Has he left the door open to possibly including them?
When were these comments made?
Overnight.
Okay. Well, look, obviously some of those players will be on the reserves list. However, whether or not they actually come into the squad, I guess that would all depend on the fitness of an Agüero. But obviously they all can't come into the squad. He knows he's gifted with the fact that he does have some seriously world-class players not attending the tournament. But regardless, the fact that he's omitted them completely and gone with the squad at this stage, when you still have some time to make decisions, strange. Just strange for me. But Argentina, difficult group. They've clearly got the best player in the world who can legitimately win this. I can't see Portugal winning the World Cup. So Lionel Messi, having him there, anything is possible. But
and he dragged him through to the final last time.
He did. And that's the point we need to remember here. This was an Argentina side who really struggled to get through that South American qualification campaign and actually left it until the final match day, where had things not gone their way, they would not have progressed. That's how difficult it was on the final day. They did need some results to go their way. They ultimately did get the win, which secured their passage through. So, look, they've got some experience. They do have a very, very weak defence, in my opinion, which will prevent them from going all the way. But regardless, a star-studded attacking lineup, with exception to the omission of Icardi and a few of those other players, as we mentioned, Argentina will still fancy themselves to top that group, which will be a fascinating group, of course, alongside Croatia, Nigeria, and the debutants, Iceland. One of two debutants at this summer's FIFA World Cup, of course, alongside Panama. So interesting. Good to see Mascherano get a call up despite moving to China. He's, unsurprisingly, the most experienced campaigner in the squad. And Sergio Romero, of course, the goalkeeper who plays for Manchester United, hasn't seen much playing time in recent seasons. He will be the number one in Russia.
And probably the other big call-up for my eyes is Cristiano Ansaldi from Torino, who actually can play both wing-back positions. So I think that his versatility is what Sampaoli has liked, and that's why he's been included. Otherwise, you wouldn't have thought he'd be in a, you know, in a preliminary squad, let alone a final squad. So congratulations to the Granata for defender.
Absolutely. Ansaldi, one of six defenders selected. I said, look, they're not the strongest in defence. And I think to win a World Cup, you certainly need a solid defence. That was proven by Brazil's leaky defence in their home World Cup 4 years ago. So big, big news coming out of Argentina, but hardly surprising, because this is exactly what was being reported for many, many weeks now. So perhaps Icardi has already come to terms with it, knew the fact that he wouldn't be going to Russia, and I guess that's why he will just move on. One other huge omission for me, which we have to touch on, because the nation of Belgium, a nation who have burst onto the scene again, they were a very strong nation years back, a couple of decades back, had a lapse. Now they're back. FIFA rankings, they're right up there. They're getting some key results. They're not excelling in tournaments, but they're stamping their authority on tournaments. But for me, I've always felt they are slightly overrated. I don't really believe that until they seriously contend for something, I don't think that we can classify them as one of the top nations in world football, let alone even European football. they have omitted Rajan Angolan, the Roma midfielder, who, again, one of the players of the season, not only for Roma, but in Italy's top flight. Nainggolan omitted, Roberto Martinez, the manager, coming out saying that I consider him to be a number 10. Now, number 10, a playmaker, absolutely not where where he plays his best football. Martinez has come out and said, no, I view him as a number 10. We have better players in that position, which, yes, they do. But Nainggolan is not that sort of player. And very sadly, Nainggolan has accepted the omission and has retired, effective immediately, from international football.
It is a little sad because I consider him more of a box-to-box midfielder. You are right, though. He wouldn't be the starting number 10 at Belgium. You don't have to give that to Kevin De Bruyne. That's a firstly. But for me, why is someone like Thorgan Hazard, why is Adan Januzaj, why is even Christian Benteke ahead of Nainggolan? And now I know they all play slightly different roles in the Belgium team, but why? Mm. I mean, from all I can make out is that Martinez and Nainggolan, they have reported they don't have a very good relationship. It's a little frosty. I mean, Nainggolan, he does like to puff the sticks, shall we put it. You know, he's known as a smoker. He is known as a little bit more of a little bit less professional than a professional, shall we say.
But his quality on the pitch.
But his quality on the pitch is what does the talking, and that's why you pick him. You don't pick him for what he actually does off the pitch. I mean, he's a little bit extroverted, but he does get the job done on the pitch. For me, I think you have to pick him, and even ahead of Fellaini. I mean, there's a controversial one. I know Fellaini is able to play in a variety of positions, anything from defensive midfielder to a centre forward if you really needed him to, but Nainggolan not to be there is a very big travesty.
No, that's hardly controversial for me, Rick. That's a nice call. Nainggolan is an exceptional player, world-class player, a player who has carried sides on his back before to wins. Those players you've just mentioned there, with all due respect, solid players, but hardly players who are going to win Belgium a World Cup. Now, Belgium currently ranked third in world football. That is a joke. They are not the third best nation in world football, but they do have quality. We know that their starting lineup will be very strong. In fact, their squad on paper isn't bad. Not bad at all. Great experience across the park. Lots of top-flight Premier League players. Mertens from Serie A. They've got Vermaelen, who plays obviously for Barcelona. Meunier, who plays for Paris Saint-Germain. So players who play right around Europe's top competitions for the top clubs, no doubt that they should consider themselves, well, certainly favourites to top their group, with all due respect to England, Tunisia and Panama. But Rajan Nainggolan brings something to this squad which otherwise they will lack. And it's been unbelievable because, for me, he's only ever played 29 times for his nation. 29 times. He's 30 years of age, undoubtedly one of their best players, and he just doesn't get looking. And it seems apparent that his off-field behaviour must be a contributing factor as to why he's never really been given an opportunity alongside the likes of Witsel, De Bruyne, Fellaini, Dembele, those other midfielders who are in the squad.
And you got to throw in the fact that he only played two World Cup qualifiers. So he wasn't getting a lot of game time. So maybe Martinez has opted to reward those who actually got Belgium through.
Yeah,
and that's the only thing
just,
I can see.
I think he's just against Nainggolan. I just feel that the Belgian Federation, those involved, they don't like the way he goes about his football. There's even been issues while with Cagliari in Italy, the club he was at before joining Roma. The same thing. There were issues about his off-field behaviour, how professional he was. Yes, the smoking came into question. Again, if the results on the pitch are there and he does his talking with the ball at his feet, what more do you need, particularly at this level where we're talking a World Cup here, a side in Belgium who really fancy themselves and really give themselves a good chance of going deep into this tournament. They've got a nice run.
They do.
They can really go deep into this tournament. A quarterfinal appearance for Belgium should be the objective, the minimum objective, because fortunately they've got a soft group and they're also linked to a very soft group as well. Again, with all due respect to Poland, Colombia, Senegal and Japan, nice passage through to the quarterfinal stage. To omit a world-class player in Nainggolan does not sit well. And as I said, he is retired. So he will never play for, well, many times players retire and then come out. Lionel Messi retired a couple of years ago, but players retire and then come out of retirement. But I really feel this will be the end for Rajan Nainggolan in Belgium.
And you just have to also wonder, didn't Michy Batshuayi cop a very serious ankle injury playing for Dortmund?
He did.
He's picked here, so obviously he will be fit and they won't be able to use him later on in the tournament, let alone at the start.
But unlike Argentina, Belgium have currently named a 28-man squad, so still five to be cut. And I'm just looking through their squad. very, very clear to see who those players will be, just given the fact they've obviously called up a few younger players just to obtain some experience in the squad at this stage. And perhaps Thorgan Hazard may be one of those to be called. But look, up front, they look good. Lukaku, the captain, Hazard, Benteke, Mertens, Batshuayi, some really nice attacking options, supported by Witzel, who currently plays in China, De Bruyne. Yes, Fellaini, obviously, he's come under some criticism, but very experienced. Dembele, as I mentioned, Carrasco also playing in China. So a few of these Chinese Super League players getting an opportunity. They are solid. Defensively, not too bad. They've got Courtois in goal, so nothing to worry about there. They look good. I just think they're a little overrated, and I think the omission of Nainggolan will certainly cost them. And that will be more costly for Belgium than Icardi's omission for Argentina. Spain. Big, big news out of Spain because they have stars coming out of everywhere. I'm going to take you through, Rick, shortly, the left-at-home 11 of Spain, their best 11 who weren't selected in the squad, because many are saying that the French have the deepest, the most talented, most gifted squad. I will be arguing that Spain have a deeper squad and deeper 11 of left-out players than the French. The Spanish are unbelievable, and in their squad, they have omitted or not included in their final squad Cesc Fabregas, Bellerin, Marcos Alonso, Alvaro Morata. They would walk into any other squad, perhaps even Germany as well. These players are at a serious level. Spain certainly firming as a serious contender to win the whole thing.
If you haven't done yourself a little bit of a favour, go out to the local newsagents and go get my magazine that I partook in Soccer International. I actually wrote the preview for Spain and for France, so I know all about both teams' depth. My issue is this. Alvaro Morata should not be at the World Cup.
He's not.
Why? This is why. Everyone who makes a comment has usually seen him at a Juventus or a Real Madrid Guernsey. Mm-hmm. What has he done in a Chelsea jersey? And the answer is next to nothing. You take him on the form, he does not have the form. Aspas has the form. Iago has the form. You take him ahead of him. Vitolo has the form. You take these guys ahead of him. No to Morata going to the club. Yes, he scored 5 goals in the qualification period, but Spain scored 36 in a weakened group with only Italy as their only competition. So I agree with that one. Bellerin's up against Carvajal. It's a very tough group. It's a very tough position to play. Maybe as a reserve, you may have taken him, but I wouldn't have personally. Fabregas, I think, hasn't done anything at Chelsea. I think he's at the wrong club there, personally speaking. Yes, he won a title last season, but he hasn't really enacted that same form. And, you know, as we know, Lopetegui has so much talent across that midfield. So, really, does it surprise me that he's not there? Well, no, not really. Are they going to play a false nine? Probably not. They've got Diego Costa to probably lead the attack. So, that's the way they're probably going to approach it. So, that's how I think, and that's why I don't think Morata not being in the team is not a bad call.
I'm not going to dispute any of that because form in a World Cup year is all that counts. It really is all that counts. Morata did not show it, and those other players you mentioned did not show it. Pedro, another one. These players, and funny, a few Chelsea players there, they just did not show the form that was required. And when you've got a squad as deep as the Spaniards are, well, you've got to be playing well, and you've got to be scoring goals. And Iago Aspas, a wonderful story with Celta Vigo, 30-year-old, only represented his nation 8 times previously. But again, the form is there. Lucas Vazquez, the same. And Moreno is currently in the squad as well from Valencia. So a very different attacking lineup for Spain. We're not used to seeing the 4 official attackers that they have included. Diego Costa, Iago Aspas, Lucas Vazquez, Rodrigo Moreno. So a very different attack. But we know how the Spaniards play. Lots of midfielders. They often play with that false 9. So when you look through their midfield ranks, with the likes, of course, of the retiring Andres Iniesta, David Silva, Sergio Busquets, great experience. And then you're supported by the talented youngsters, or Isco, if you still want to call him a youngster, but obviously Saul and Asensio, Thiago Alcantara, they are going to be very hard to stop.
That 4-5-1 that Lopetegui has actually nailed, and they will put that in the exact word it is, he has nailed it. He has gotten it specifically perfect. They are going to be very hard to beat. That's why they're my tip.
Yeah, and I can see why. I can see why. Let me take you through this Spanish left-at-home 11 because it's very, very good. So Asensio in goal, back 4 of Bellerin, Bartra, Martinez, Alonso, some of those we've already mentioned. A midfield of Sergio Roberto, Ilar Mendy, Fabregas, and a front 3 of Calleón, Morata, and Vitolo. Very strong, very, very strong. And I think that would beat the French 11, which I believe we raised in last week's program. Regardless, the Spanish will certainly be favourites, of course, joining that group with Portugal, Iran and Morocco. They certainly top that, don't they?
Absolutely.
They have
Absolutely.
To. Absolutely. No choice but to. They are very strong. And look, some doubted whether or not the Spaniards would be able to continue their form from earlier this decade. But I really believe that this, well, it's the same generation of players, just with a few talented youngsters.
They've just evolved.
Well, they've evolved in a way which has resulted in no going backwards. They are at a level which they can seriously contend and compete for anything. They've had a few slip-ups in recent seasons. We know they weren't at their best in the 2014 FIFA World Cup. They will be very hungry to bounce back. And with a lot of these players playing at their final World Cup, without doubt, for the final time in their respective careers, when I mention that, obviously, Sergio Ramos, Pique, Iniesta, David Silva, Busquets, Diego Costa, these are players who will really want to go out on a high.
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it on the head. I mean, that next generation, those six players that you mentioned, probably won't be there for Qatar 2022, or at least be at the very last of their legs that they've actually got to go on the pitch. So this Spain team has to really evolve, and it's done it really, really well. And I actually can't wait for some of those names of the team that you read out, the players that missed, coming in for Qatar. So someone like a Bartra, that would be really nice.
Absolutely.
Marcus Alonso might get a Guernsey, maybe in midfield or even as a backup, a left back. Would be very, very interesting.
Well, they'll be the experienced players by that point in time. And obviously, European Championships and plenty more football still to come for the Spanish national team. They're your favourite. My favourite are the Brazilians. I'm still tipping them to win it. We'll have more on Brazil and all the other top nations still to come right here on The Road to Russia on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia.
With thanks to Optus Sport, it's The Road to Russia with Adriano Del Monte on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to The Road to Russia right here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea. Yeah, talking all things World Cup with just a few weeks to go until the tournament kicks off. A reminder to everyone in Australia that all 64 games of the 2018 FIFA World Cup are live on Optus Sport. That's right, the only place to watch every single game, every spectacular goal, and all the key moments from the world's best nations live on Optus Sport. Exciting time, Rick. Lots of news floating around, all around the world, of course, but particularly with these World Cup nations. And a very interesting saga developing with Peru. Of course, their captain, Paulo Guerrero, who was banned for 14-month ban for taking a cocaine substance. There is some news unfolding, though, that he's trying to get that overturned and pulling out all socks to get it done.
He is. He's sort of doing what the Yana Pittman back in the day at the Sydney, at the Athens Olympics, if I'm not mistaken. She tried everything to try and make that team and ultimately just fell short with her knee. So very similar things here have been done by Guerrero. So Hugo Lloris, the captain of France, Mila Jedinak, obviously the Socceroos captain, and Simon Kjær, who is the Denmark captain, they have all three have signed a letter to FIF Pro, which is the players' union of FIFA, mm-hmm. and who has actually been passed on from the FIF Pro to FIFA themselves, trying to reinstate Guerrero back to the World Cup. So it's a very interesting saga. I mean, all three nations are obviously playing against Peru, and they want the best players out there. It's a very interesting move, and I wonder what action will be taken by FIFA, considering that three of the four nations in that Group C want to see the best and a player overturned for their cocaine ban, I guess you could say.
Do we think it will be overturned? I think being so close to the World Cup, I'm not so sure that he'll have enough time.
It's a bit hard. I mean, FIFA generally don't do these sort of things. They don't overturn these sorts of decisions, and they're not going to go against the Court of Arbitration for Sport, because if they start now, who knows how far back these consequences could go. So I don't think FIFA want to get themselves into a far-reaching campaign, and I think this one might have to sort of stick as it is.
Well, there you go. Well, we wish him well. Who knows? FIFPro, of course, that organisation, the head of that company's communications, marketing and corporate affairs is one of our good friends here at FNR Football Nation Radio, former SBS and ESPN host Andrew Orsatti. So he's actually involved in that. So we wish them well, of course. And, well, you know, it's very nice to see the other nations supporting a player who will be an opponent at the World Cup. But as you correctly said, Rick, they want to take on the best of what is out there. So let's see what happens there. With a few weeks to go, it remains unlikely for me.
It remains unlikely, but what they also want to do is not only do they want him to play, but they want the ban to then start after the World Cup, or to recommence after the World Cup. That makes it even worse.
Yeah, that's it. I don't think that's a legitimate outcome, because if he's going to be banned but allowed to play the World Cup, what's the point of
exactly,
the ban?
Exactly.
We will see. Let's move on to a few of the other big nations, and let's go to Croatia. They've announced their 24-man squad so far. So, again, when I say why does teams bother doing 23, why have Croatia made 24? Perhaps an injury internally. They know that one player may be forced to miss. But regardless, a very nice squad, Croatia, and certainly a nation who can perform at the highest level. And I'm tipping will do again. They are in that Argentina group we touched on earlier. Lots and lots of experience, some great talent coming through the ranks. You have to give them an opportunity to go to be a surprise and go deep in this tournament.
Yeah, I reckon they can. I mean, they're in that group D with Argentina. I mean, Iceland, why they can get through. But I think I found the player that actually made the 24 and I think might actually be cut. And he's your man. I'm going to call him your man here.
Who is he?
Ante Rebic. Now, the name rings a bell because he actually scored the double in the German Cup final on the weekend. So
yes.
I think that's what's happened because also on the list that I have here, every other player has a team next to them. Rebic does not. Now, I know he's from Eintracht Frankfurt. Eintracht Frankfurt. But I think there's 24 in the team, and I think he's just been put in based on what he was able to do in that German Cup final. So I think he might be the one to ultimately depart the team. But it's nice to see at least the coach giving these sort of players who are in a little bit of form, who have performed at the highest level, and you know, with all due respect, the German Cup is of a decent level.
Well, they did take care of Bayern Munich.
And they did take care of Bayern Munich. It's actually good to see him being rewarded, at least being put into a training camp, and then we'll see if he actually does make the 23.
Really impressive attack, Croatia, and obviously fed by a talented midfield as well. On paper, again, football is not one on paper, but this is a side who, with a solid defence, wonderfully experienced midfield, and a golden attack, they can do something. The only difficulty, they're linked with Group C. The French.
It's a tough one. I mean, even Nigeria. Nigeria isn't a walk in the park type team as much as we
Iceland
think they are.
Certainly
Iceland
won't
aren't. Obviously, Argentina, they're not an easy team to beat through. But, I mean, for me, it's all about that midfield. Mm. It's all about what Kovacic can do. What can Modric and Rakitic do? That's, for me, where
very
it is.
Very nice
and
midfield.
I mean, obviously,
Brozovic.
You throw in Mario Mandzukic up top and Perisic. Well, there's very a combination
strong
up there.
Well, look at their attack. Mandzukic and Perisic, two players who are at the top of their game at the moment. Kalinic, a player who really underwhelmed at the Rossoneri AC Milan, of course, but look, does bring some solid experience. Kramaric, a player who's played across multiple leagues in recent seasons, got it done at Hoffenheim this season. And Piazza, one of the hottest young properties in world football at the moment, on loan at Schalke from Juventus. This is a side who can score, and I think they will push Argentina all the way in Group D.
Absolutely. They are technically very, very gifted, especially down defence. Knowing all these Croatian teams over the seasons and all over the years at World Cup level, they don't want to concede goals, and they're not going to concede cheaply. Mm. I'm almost going to go as far as saying, on paper, they're as strong as a Belgium team, but their goalkeeper. That's it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go as far as that because I think they are.
Think Croatia are weaker in goal?
I think they are. Compared to Belgium, who have got Courtois in goal. I can't see Subasic, Kalinic, or Livakovic being stronger than Courtois, which is fair enough.
Sure.
And you even throw Mignolet as a second goalkeeper at Belgium. I think they're that little bit strong. But I reckon in the other 10 positions, they are almost as strong, if not stronger, than Belgium.
No, I take that. But they are my tip to be the surprise group winner. I think Croatia can really top this group. Iceland, Nigeria and Argentina, it's a nice, difficult group for all involved. I just think across the board, Croatia are much stronger than Argentina. Obviously, up front, Argentina have got a strong case. But Croatia, I really like across the board to top this group.
Yeah, I'm actually in agreement with you there as well because you throw in Iceland. Iceland, Sigurdsson is still under an injury cloud. And he's been named in the team. So he may not even make it. And if he does, he might be even playing in the round of 16 quarterfinal period. So he might even skip the three group games.
And if they get there.
If they get there. But I think that's going to be a little bit too far for them. So that excludes me from actually having to pick Iceland to make it through. Nigeria is not on the same level as Argentina and Croatia. Yes, they push Argentina time and time again. I think it opens up between those two.
The Icelandic story is just phenomenal.
It's great.
A population of less than 340,000. The fact that they're competing at the highest level and the fact that they have been really impressive in qualification, of course, Euro 2016 finals. This is a nation who, well,
they're on the rise.
They are on the rise, but it's funny. I feel lots of people are feeling that, well, we're expecting big things from Iceland at this tournament and anything but, you know, recording a few points will be a disappointment. But really, to get this far with the resources and with the population that they have is an achievement in its own right, and just being there will be enough for them. But given the rate of development that has undergone in Iceland in recent seasons and over this decade, I'm expecting big things from them. I don't know if I'm spot on to be feeling that way, but I'm really expecting Iceland to come out and shock a few sides. And they should be competing for a top two spot, which is incredible to say in a team against Croatia, we just mentioned, the Argentine national team as well, and Nigeria, an African nation who are very strong in their own confederation, do have some solid World Cup experience. It's going to be a fascinating group, and this group, Group D for me, is the one which all eyes will be on, I feel. Just so many potential side notes to this. Iceland with their first appearance at a World Cup finals. Really cannot wait, and really exciting from a Socceroos perspective to be linked with this group as well. Of course, Group C, Group D, the winners and runner-ups will meet each other in the next round. So should the Friends win Group C, as expected, they'll take on the runner-up in Group D and vice versa, of course. So moving over to that group, Group C, the Socceroos, Denmark, Peru and the French. French, they're looking good.
They are.
They have omitted some serious names, though. And, of course, there were the cases that many are making that the omitted 11 from the French is as good as anyone out there. They may have a case. But one player who I'm very surprised who isn't there, and he hasn't played for large parts of the season, that will play against you, but Kingsley Coman, a young player who has won by the age of 20 or 21. He's won everything there is to win in football. He's won Champions Leagues, Italian title, German title, French title, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, left out of the World Cup squad. They are very impressive, the French. They do have many players in his position, but I think he is a little unlucky given the form he has shown over the past couple of seasons.
But is he unlucky, though? I mean, he underwent some serious and major ankle surgery.
Well, the timing is unfortunate.
And that's the only thing that's cost him, though, but otherwise you would have picked him. And that's sure. The problem is the timing of these injuries. I mean, Koscielny would have been a walk-in starter at the French 11.
That's a very big omission.
Unfortunately, though, he's done his Achilles and he's out to, I think, December, even early next year. So it's a very, very big call. But I understand why Deschamps made that call. I mean, like we've said, they are littered with talent. I mean, you take out even their best 11, their second, even their third 11 will probably make a World Cup and could probably make a round of 16. That's how littered they are with talent. It's a big call, but I understand that.
How far can they go, though, the French? Because they have... What they don't have, what the other top nations do have, are players with serious experience. Now, they have Lloris, their captain, who's their most capped player in the squad, 96 caps. When I look at the Spanish, though, and I see David Silva, Iniesta, Sergio Ramos, all-time cap leaders for that nation. The French, for me, they are very young. They're very good. But they just lack that serious level of experience across the board. Their most experienced attacker is Olivier Giroud. A great player, I like Giroud, but not a player who is of the same level of an Iniesta or a Sergio Ramos. And that's where I feel the French are just a little outdone by in comparison to these other top nations.
The only thing I say against that, though, is they remind me of an Argentina. They've got the quality up top, and I mean, we can recite them time again. Griezmann, Mbappe, you know, we can name
Fekir,
Giroud,
Dembele.
All these sort of, but they have a defence.
They do.
And that's the difference. And that's the difference between a France and an Argentina.
But how important is the experience, though, at this level? Because they've got one defender in their ranks. Okay, you say they've got a defence. They do. But they've got one defender who's over the age of 25. And that is Adil Rami. He's 32. Only ever represented his team, or his national team, 33 times. They really lack significant experience at the highest level. And Varane, a player who is easily one of the best central defenders in world football, 25 years of age, 41 caps, the most capped defender in their ranks, certainly enough to get through that group.
Absolutely.
Denmark, Peru, the Socceroos, they'll breeze through that group with their eyes closed. No issues whatsoever. But it's going forward in midfield. Matuidi, great player, but again, not overly experienced. He's never really led the French national team. He's represented his team 64 times, but this isn't a player who has achieved success at the highest level of international football. Paul Pogba, a great player, but he's had his issues this season for form and fitness. Kante, Lemar, Tolisso, and Nzonzi. I am not sold on the French, and I think they are one of the most hyped-up nations in this tournament. And I tell you what, let me make a prediction here, Rick.
Go on.
If Croatia finish second in Group D and the French win Group C, I will be tipping Croatia to eliminate the French. I think they're a better side.
I'm going to go against you.
And you, why? You do that?
I will, because
I don't rate the French.
2 years ago, what did the French do?
What did they do? You tell me.
Well, you tell me. Well, didn't someone called Antoine Griezmann score, 7 goals in a European championship?
They
as opposed to a weakened European Championship?
Yeah, they did. And then they lost the final to Portugal with no Ronaldo.
Didn't they make the final?
They made the final on their home turf.
So they have experience in these sort of bigger events, in these latter stages. Yes, I know. I understand where you're saying. You're saying because they don't have the age, they may not have the experience in the legs at the crucial moments, at the pinnacle of tournaments. No, I understand that.
I think they're overhyped. I think the French are overhyped. They will breeze. This is what they'll do. I'll tell you exactly what the French will do. They will breeze through Group C. They'll go 3-3, 9 points.
Will. I agree.
Probably won't concede a goal. They will look like rock stars, and they are rock stars. Great side, great players. But when it comes to the big matches, I'll tell you what, this side, no chance against one of the big boys. Germany, Brazil, Spain, no chance. No chance for me.
It's a big call.
That's why we're here.
It's a bit early, I think, to say no chance against Germany or against Spain. I think it's a little bit too early because on the day, one-off matches, anything can happen. We've said this time and time again, and we'll probably say it for the Champions League final over and over again when we start to preview these shows tomorrow and Thursday.
People will be tweeting me now and saying to me, well, the French took care of the Germans in the European Championships and they were less experienced then. I take your point. But where these players are at the moment, Koscielny, make no mistake, he's a big loss.
Absolutely.
He is a huge loss for the French. And he would have been the most experienced player in the squad. Again, if experience is an important factor to you, okay. But he would have been wonderful to have there in the centre of defence alongside Varane. They would have worked very well together. They will be impressive. They will probably be the most impressive side in the group stage, but I just don't think that they have what it takes to go all the way.
So you're thinking they're going to do something like an Argentina 2010
exactly.
Where they will absolutely blitz the group stage. And
Spain
then
used to do it all the time. They used to breeze through the group stage out in the round of 16. I can't remember how many times the Spaniards did that before they got their act together in 2010. That is what I feel will happen with the French.
Maybe not, but I'm going to say there's one weakness that I can see, though, in this team, and that's Mendy. Now, he's had a sensational last, 18 to 24 months. So, I don't know. Coming back from that knee injury, you know, he's been out the best part of a year. Mm. He's only made, two or three appearances for Manchester City this season. That's going to be a big call to be thrown into a World Cup and all of a sudden have to play at least three matches, aiming for seven, and obviously seven victories is what you want. That's going to be a big call to throw him in at left back and to tell him to actually lead a team and stop a whole heap of right wingers. That's a big, big call.
Overhyped and overrated for me. That's enough on the French, but I think they will. Remember what I said, 9 points, and then they will find it difficult beyond that. Looking forward to seeing them in action, though, because they have a lot of stars, no doubt. Now, speaking of stars and young stars, Rick, there are lots of young stars in the French side. Who are some of the youngsters at this summer's World Cup who perhaps we should keep an eye on? Because I could pick a few in the French side. I'll tell you one player who is French who I'm looking forward to seeing on the world stage, and that is Dembele, because we haven't had enough of a look at him consistently at Barcelona. This will be interesting to see whether or not he even plays because, okay, Giroud,
that winger position is very, very talented.
Giroud, Griezmann, Mbappe, Fekir, not so sure who they will actually go with, but regardless, he's one as a sub-21-year-old who I'm very keen to see in Russia.
Absolutely, and probably as well, you'd want to see what he can do at the absolute level.
I mean,
he's come from Rennes, he went to Dortmund, he's basically spent two clubs in two seasons, and now he's made that mega money move to Barcelona. He started off with all those injuries that he had. He missed, 3, 4, even 5 months of the opening campaign for the La Liga Champions.
And the best part of the first half of the campaign.
Basically, it was. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't even getting 90 minutes guaranteed week in, week out. So all of a sudden, he now has to prove himself that he's worth 105 million euros. So he's having to step up. But I think he's going to be his Barcelona teammate that's going to get a lot more attention in Samuel Umtiti. He's probably not going to start, and that's going to be the big thing over Varane and Rami in that French central defence. So do you throw him at right back? Do you throw him at left back? And he's going to be the one to watch, I think, in my eyes, that we need to actually watch and see how well he performs.
Well, the French, I don't want to talk about the French anymore, but they do have four players who have four caps or less out of their eight defenders. I don't think they're going to go too deep, but who are some of the other youngsters perhaps that we should be keeping an eye on in Russia?
I think absolutely. Leon Goretzka from Germany. I think you have to watch him. He's in that star-sided team. He's broken through at Schalke. He's probably going to make a move to one of the bigger European clubs. I mean, Bayern Munich have been chasing him, and they'll probably get him on a free transfer sometime this summer. I think you have to use him. I think he's going to be one to watch. The other one, I think I've said it before, but Marcos Asensio. I mean, absolutely, what he's been doing at Real Madrid, you know, he's on another level. What he was able to do even at, you know, the Euro 2016 when Spain did underwhelm and how he was able to break through, I think you have to watch him definitely. And he probably will get a lot of game time under Lopetegui. So very interesting. Even his teammate Isco, he's a couple of years older, maybe not one of the youngsters, but you have to watch the two of them.
Yeah, not so much a youngster, but someone who has an opportunity now to really burst onto the scene in international football, something that he hasn't done consistently previously. Very excited to watch the Spanish play because of that balance between the experience and the youth.
And if we get out of Europe or European teams,
probably
another two that I'd probably have to mention. That's Irving Lozano, who's at Mexico now. No one's probably ever heard of him. But unless you're
you have.
So you know that he plays at PSV and you know that he's scored, what, 17 goals and 8 assists.
That's what I was going to say, yep.
He's very much talented. Thrown in, he'll be working very hard on his counter-attacking moves because that's where he's got a burst of speed that can really burn teams. So Germany will have to be very, very watchful as they will obviously be pressing, but they will want to actually watch him going the other way because he can actually hurt you very, very much. So very much there. And the other one, obviously, at Uruguay, Federico Valverde.
Beautiful. You've
got to watch him.
Looking forward to it. Plenty more still to come. We're off to our final break for the day. But stay tuned. You are listening to the Road to Russia right here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
With thanks to Optus Sport, it's the Road to Russia with Adriano Del Monte on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, it is. And welcome back for the final time today to the Road to Russia right here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Brazil, Rick, my favourites for the World Cup. I'm going to stick to this. I was disheartened a little when Dani Alves went down with that anterior cruciate ligament injury, ruling him out for the remainder of 2018, and obviously with that, the FIFA World Cup. But I'm maintaining my belief. I really like the story of the Brazilians. I really like the fact that they have something significant to bounce back from that disastrous 2014 campaign, if you'd like to call it that, making a semi-final. But I really like how they're positioned at the moment. Some interesting comments about Neymar recently as well.
Yeah, so, you know, their coach Tita has come out and he sort of said that he wants to sort of lower the expectation and the pressure, something that he's had at PSG all this time, and even at Barcelona he was developing and building it up. He wants to lower that expectation whilst he's at the Brazil and at the World Cup, which is a really, really interesting thing because normally your superstar is the focal point. Unfortunately, he's coming back from that metatarsal injury. He's been out for the best part of 3 months. He hasn't seen any action. And now, all of a sudden, he's expected to lead not only his nation to the World Cup, but to World Cup glory after what you've just said, you know, needing to bounce back after that 7-1 semi-final defeat to Germany. And he wants to lower that expectation because he doesn't want the pressure to be put on him as the sole striker, as the one who's going to dictate the terms and make it all about
him. But for
a
player of Neymar's calibre, surely he's up to taking that on board. Surely he's okay with the pressure. I mean, being a player who is that expensive and earns that much money, surely that's just what comes with the job.
Yeah, I can understand, but you got to imagine as well, it's not just about the job. It's the emotional toll that he has to put up with. Week in, week out, day in, day out, hearing that you're being transferred. Day in, day out, hearing that you are the Brazilian superstar who will lead your nation to World Cup glory. That's going to take a toll on you, especially emotionally. I mean, physically, we know he's injured, so we can't do anything about that, but emotionally, mentally, that's got to get to him eventually. And if Tite can sort of lower that and put a little bit more pressure on the likes of, say, Diego Costa, Coutinho, Firmino, Gabriel Jesus, these sorts of players, and tell them and sort of expect them to perform at the level that they have over the last couple of seasons, that actually might help Brazil a lot more and push them a lot further than everyone thinks. And obviously, in your eyes, they're going to win it. But but obviously, in everybody else's eyes who think they aren't going to win it because of the draw that they're in and who they're grouped up and who they're linked against, it might actually push them maybe that one round further than everyone sort of thinks they will.
Well, I think they're going to go all the way. So one round further than that is pretty far. That's the 2022. But look, it's going to be interesting to see Neymar because he's still not fit. Obviously, he hasn't played any football for the best part of 4 or 5 months. But he is closing in on a few records. So in the World Cup, he's currently the fourth all-time goal scorer for Brazil. There is no doubt that he'll surpass the all-time mark set by Pelé back in the 50s, 60s and early 1970s. But Neymar at the moment, 53 goals for his national team. Romario is third with 55. Neymar needs 3 goals at the World Cup to surpass Romario and move into third behind Pelé and Ronaldo.
I'm just going to have to wonder with Neymar, is will Tite risk him in the group stage to get him some game time? Maybe even
it depends how fit he is, of course, because Brazil, they have some warm-up fixtures, as everyone do. Brazil take on, I
Austria?
Believe, Croatia and Austria. So two fixtures in Europe in the lead-up. It depends how he gets through that. If he doesn't play minutes in those fixtures, there is no way he plays Switzerland on the opening day. Just not possible. They'll have to bring him. Well, it certainly won't start in that match, no. But he'll be brought in. I can imagine that he will be brought in as a substitute, perhaps, in that first match. Although that is a danger game for Brazil because the Swiss are very strong. We know how good they
were. Especially defensively with Ricky Rodriguez and Lichtsteiner.
Absolutely. Very strong side, Switzerland. We know how good they were in their qualification campaign in Europe. But the matches against Costa Rica and Serbia, big opportunity for Neymar just to work his way into some form in that match. But I'm liking what I'm seeing from the mid and attack of Brazil in the back half of the season. You said Diego Costa, you meant Douglas Costa, the Juventus player.
Douglas Costa, sorry.
Because Diego Costa now with Spain.
He is.
Did play a game for Brazil,
he did.
Though. So
he
very
did.
Confusing. A lot of people make that mistake. But Neymar, Douglas Costa, Firmino, Gabriel Jesus, and Tyson are very nice, but in form.
Well, yes.
With exception to Neymar, he hasn't played, but very in form, those players. Douglas Costa, without doubt, the best player for Juventus in 2018. Firmino, as part of that Liverpool trio, amazing. Gabriel Jesus, very strong, has had to deal with some issues injury-wise this season, but very strong. And Tyson with Shakhtar, very, very impressive. So very nice attack there, supported by Willian, Paulinho, Fernandinho, Coutinho, Casemiro, four or five players in their own right who have just got stronger and stronger as the year's gone on. And look at Coutinho with that goal he scored at the weekend. So a few key players missing out, but with a very solid experienced defence, Thiago Silva, Marcelo, Marquinhos, Miranda, they will go a long way in this tournament, make no mistake about that. But that first match against Switzerland, huge to determine how far they do go.
Get the result, they're through automatically on top.
Absolutely. Switzerland could shock a few, and I think that they will go through with Brazil in this group because Costa Rica and Serbia, well, Costa Rica surprised everyone in the 2014 World Cup, but can they do it again? That remains to be seen. Now, while we're talking about the Brazilians, some extraordinary remarks made recently by Michel Platini confirming that the 1998 World Cup, and obviously the relevance of Brazil there, they were in the final against the host nation, the French winning it 3-0. Platini has confirmed the 98 World Cup draw was fixed and then said they are all sort of. So basically what happened here was the draw itself was set out in a way that the French and Brazilians couldn't meet until the final. Brazilians were obviously the favourites to win the tournament, and as they always are coming in, the French on home soil wanted to ensure that they could get as deep as possible, and in doing so, they had to avoid the Brazilians, and surprise, surprise, it's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I was just reading the comments. It's a very, very interesting thing that the former UEFA president has said. I'll read about just very, very briefly. France-Brazil in the final, it was a dream of everyone, he told a radio station. There was a little trickery. We did not spend 6 years organising the World Cup to not do some little shenanigans. Do you think the other World Cup hosts did not? Very, very strange.
Very strange. Very strange.
Very.
And we know there have been a few issues with Platini and UEFA and FIFA in recent years, but yeah, I suppose he's just confirming. Well, no one knew specifically that was a secret, but I guess he's just confirming one of the worst kept secrets in world football.
But I guess the other thing that he sort of either didn't click or didn't remember is that the hosts and the holders are usually on the opposite sides of the tournament, so they can't actually meet until the final.
Regardless, why make those comments?
That's
who,
the first
who is that
point.
Benefiting making comments along those lines that, hey, guess what? We actually did rig the draw.
It taints the 98 World Cup for. I mean, the amount of. I happened to be in Italy at the time, and I think I flew into France for one of the games. Mm. And I threw it out, was with my family at the time. The amount of joy that I was seeing in Paris. I mean, the Arc de Triomphe, the roundabout that has 25,000 exits all around, there was not a car in sight. The Champs-Élysées was full of people at the time. I was, I think, 12 at the time. I just remember a sea of about 300,000 people going down that kilometre stretch up to the Triomphe and near the Eiffel Tower. They were joyous. There was not one remittance of trickery, of corruption, whatever you want to call it, being said by the French. They were just in the moment, enjoying it all. Mm. Why now would a former UEFA president make these allegations?
No idea. I have no idea. Funnily enough, as I'm just looking at the group stage draw for that World Cup, and Brazil were actually drawn in Group A alongside Group B, and Group B was Italy's group. So the French, obviously, this is something that hasn't been uncovered, but I have just uncovered it now right here exclusively on the Road to Russia on FNR Football Nation Radio. Italy are in Group B, meaning that if one of those two nations finished second, they would have had to have played one another. So a smart plan by the French, and it worked because they ended up eliminating Brazil in the final. They eliminated Italy on penalties in the quarterfinal, so they got their reward.
They did.
Congratulations to them. A strange way to end the program. Hopefully that doesn't happen this time around in 2018. We know there have been a few issues in the lead-up. Everything seems to be ironed out. With just a few weeks to go now, the countdown is well and truly on. 32 nations, 8 groups, plenty of action still to come. And a reminder for everyone right here in Australia that all 64 games of the 2018 FIFA World Cup are live on Optus Sport, the only place to watch every single game, every spectacular goal, and all the key moments from the world's best nations live on Optus Sport. Rick, wonderful stuff today. Look forward to talking World Cup action with you again in 7 days' time. We'll have all the World Cup action covered right here across the network. So stay tuned and check your local guides for all the excitement and for what's to come. But for now, from me, Adriano Del Monte, this has been the Road to Russia on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football throughout Australia. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
With thanks to Optus Sport, it's the Road to Russia with Adriano Del Monte on FNR Football Nation Radio.